It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great panel for you. Alex Lindsay is here with Renee and Andy. We're going to talk about Tim Cook's interview with the Wall Street Journal and parse it in great detail. What does he mean, a new category? We will talk about what an iWatch could do, might do, and how much it should cost. All that and more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 389, recorded February 11th, 2014. A boy, a pipe, and a dream. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak2. Squarespace, a better web awaits. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to get $10 off at checkout. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/MBW to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple sphere of influence. How about that? That's a good one.
Sphere.
Alex Lindsay is here. Speaking of spheres of influence, he influences all. He was doing the This Week in Alex show a little earlier. Thank you. Filling in for me while
A little dead time.
I got in here late. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Thank you for being here. How is it in Wait a minute. Your set has changed once again.
I'm not in Montreal. I actually found a worse place to go. I'm in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Oh,
right now.
No.
You decided it wasn't cold enough where you were?
No.
Out of the freezer and into the ice.
Winnipeg's the place where summer's 3 weeks long.
Yeah, it's actually the coldest place in the world sometimes during the year.
Yeah, I had a friend played in a rock band who had a gig in Winnipeg. I actually asked him, I said, what's the worst place? He says, Winnipeg. I won't say the name of the band. Very well-known rock band. He said, it was like without hesitation, Winnipeg. Winnipeg. Summer or winter, Winnipeg. Andy Inako is here with his robotic dentistry once again on display. Nice to see you.
I on that list of like, once I become like a psychotic trillionaire, I would love to go to like a place like Winnipeg and simply say that either you love this place or you're really, really stuck here. I will contribute $15,000 per person, up to $500,000, up to $100,000 per family. If you want to move, I will underwrite your moving expenses and just see how many people stay in one of these places. Really? Where, oh, wow. Risk minus 40 today.
Well, it's like, you know, there are a lot of places. Alaska's like that.
It's a very odd place to choose to live. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I watched Free the Whale movie last night.
And then, Free Willy?
No, the other one where the whales are trapped in Alaska.
Oh, with John Krasinski, yeah.
Yeah, with John Krasinski, yeah. I don't know why I was watching that. There was no child with me. I just...
Renee, wanted to feel good again today.
That's it. I do, too. Dem90 in the chat room says, you're now in the cold part of Canada.
Yeah, the colder part of Canada.
They would put that on a bumper sticker, but at that temperature, adhesive doesn't work.
The cold part of Canada. But think of the great groups that have come from Winnipeg, Curtis B. points out, including The Guess Who, Bachman-Turner Overdrive, and Neil Young. I think out of Winnipeg is the key on that phrase.
The guy who invented plane de-icing lives in Winnipeg.
Not
surprise.
A surprise. I'm not.
This
giving
is a real
a hard
problem here at home.
I've never been there, and I'd love to. Why are you in Winnipeg?
I am visiting my good friend Kevin Michaluk from Crackberry.com. Mm. We're doing a bunch of work, and if you're going to work, you might as well be too cold to go outside and not work.
Is that his apartment? It's a nice place. Looks nice.
Yeah, it's his house. He very kindly gave me his podcasting setup to use.
Beautiful. Well, you sound good. You look good. And you have stairways. I like stairways on television sets that go somewhere or nowhere.
Why don't we have any here?
We should. I actually, believe it or not, I was in the spec. Believe it or not. The original spiral staircase from the Screensavers is up the road a piece. A guy has it. I met a guy. He said, you know, I have your staircase. So I said, what? He said, yeah, you know, when they took apart the set, they sold it off and stuff. And I have the spiral staircase. I said, I want it. But we never did manage to hook up and get it. Maybe we still will.
It'd be great. Then you can be walking down the stairs at the open of the show.
That's part of the show.
Right.
That's also a great design aesthetic. If you put in that plan that I want the set to look like the set of a 1983 action movie with unnecessary railings and balconies everywhere and a machine that does nothing but turn a huge gear and spit out fire every 8 seconds.
Brilliant.
Like a sitcom, the staircase to nowhere.
I think the reason the staircase works on a television set because it gives you the cue that this is a real space and there's more above and below.
Right.
And that's a good cue to have, especially in a place which is basically a box with paint. It's a nice thing to do. Anyway, we are not here to talk about silly things like Winnipeg and staircases. We are here to talk about cabbages and kings. We are here to talk about Apple. And the reason I'm not really in a great big hurry is because it's pretty much the same stories we had last week. Tim Cook says Apple's working on some really great stuff and some brand
really,
new products.
Really great stuff.
That's
and there's lots of rumors that those great things are. I think we've all coalesced in that those two great things are Apple TV and iWatch.
I don't think he even this was very much like what he told All Things D 6 months ago. he told this to the Wall Street Journal in part. You know, it's a longer interview in which they talk about how Apple's buying back $14 billion in shares, which means Carl Icahn can stand down.
Did you see not many people push him to the curb?
Okay. They did.
Yeah, they pushed him to the curb.
He says, I give up.
He gave up. Well, that's because the ISS, the investment firm or whatever, said that, you know, they aren't going to back him. And without them, you know, once they announced that, there was absolutely no chance he was going to get.
In the 1980s, you spelled greed, I-C-A-H-N. He was the guy, you know, and he's the rebel investor.
Right.
The guy who comes into a company, he may be one of Apple's biggest shareholders. I think he has more than 1% of Apple stock.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I want, as a stockholder, he owns $4 billion in shares, I want Apple to give some of this cash, this $167 billion in cash it has in the bank, back to its shareholders.
Back to him.
Back to him, basically. You know, this is really what's wrong with the stock market. Is Carl Icahn couldn't care less about anything except I bought $4 billion worth of Apple shares.
Value.
I want it to be worth $8 billion now.
Right.
Please. I got that much on me right now. I don't bend down on the street to pick up a $1 million bill if I find it there in the gutter.
Yeah, it's not about the long term value of the company. It's about a quick pump and dump, which is sad because it affects so many tech companies so badly.
But the interesting date to consider in this whole conversation is 2024.
Why?
At the rate Apple's buying back, they will be private.
Do you think the plan is to buy back $60 billion worth of stock, not all the stock.
I'm saying if they kept on doing it at the rate that they're doing it at, which they could afford to do without, they would actually, if they did it at the rate that they're doing it now, they would their cash position would continue to increase if they bought 10% of their stock back a year.
Who is ISS?
It is, you know, that's
is
what
that
I
his investment
to find it.
Company?
No, it's not his investment company. It's another one.
He wrote, "Dear fellow Apple shareholders, while we are disappointed that last night ISS recommended against our proposal, our buyback proposal, we do not altogether disagree with their assessment. Basically, in their ISS said, on the spectrum of options for allocating capital, the board appears to have been sluggish only in returning excess cash to shareholders. And even though the company has in place one of the largest buybacks in history.
It's not one of, it is the largest buyback.
We agree that this effort seems like bailing with a leaky bucket given the scale of the company's cash reserves. I think Apple's point of view and Tim Cook's point of view is we want the cash in case.
Well, in case they decide they want to buy AT&T or they want to buy Disney or they want to buy something really, really big, you want to have that kind of cash, you know, available. It gives them a lot of freedom.
But Carl Icahn says, I see money in that vault and I want some of it. Anyway, he's back down.
How old is he? How much longer do we
he's
have to put up with him?
932, like Yoda.
Right.
He's an older man. Good looking fella.
nicely dressed.
He doesn't appear to be wearing sunscreen, so that's maybe a,
that's a positive. I wonder what he plans to do with all that vast fortune.
Probably not give it away.
Back to the shareholders.
Give it away now.
He's probably not going to go the way of Bill Gates.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
He does seem like one of those billionaires who likes it when people pay attention to the things that he says.
77.
When he makes all these statements, I wonder how much of this is really motivated by this is his intense belief that this is something that Apple should do, and how much of this is just that I get to be wise old investment guy who gets to, look, a microphone. Great. I will say something prophetic and interesting.
Apple has not made a lot of big purchases. You know, they bought hither and, little stuff.
I think I read that they've never bought any company for more than a billion.
Yeah, they're fairly frugal. Yeah. Tim Cook told Wall Street Journal, though, we have looked at big companies. We have no problem spending 10 figures. How many is that? I have 10 fingers.
That would be a billion.
A billion?
Yep.
Yeah, well, right. We have no problem spending 10
because
figures.
Because it's chump change.
But what about 11 figures? What about 11?
They're not going to spend it on Instagram, I think was his point.
Right. For the right fit that's in the best interest of Apple in the long term. No problem. None. Zero.
I think that the challenge for Apple would be the mix of cultures. I think buying a company that's that big, I think the biggest problem would be trying to assimilate that many employees. I think almost every time we see those kind of mergers, it's pretty ugly.
It's ugly.
And Apple is...
Especially AOL, Time Warner.
Well, especially when you have such a
HP Compaq.
Well, and you have a very, very specific culture at Apple, which is very different than most other corporations. I think that would be a difficult mix if you had too many people in a new company.
At the same time, although they buy a lot of companies, can you name the last time that they bought a company that really had its own public identity? They buy a lot of little companies that are starting up that seems to have a technology they want. They're certainly on the rise, right?
FileMaker, but that was years ago, but that was probably the last big name acquisition.
Next was probably their biggest integration, and that went the other way.
Yeah.
And even now, it's a struggle. I mean, they used to have this enough experienced people that you could do a mentor relationship with new people and really enculturate them quickly. And then they grew so fast, they had to start establishing Apple University and teach more like a lecture hall because the people who were new to Apple started outnumbering by vast quantities the people established at Apple. And that's a huge problem right now, and any large-scale purchase would only exasperate that problem.
Yeah, I love Horace Dediu. He's so funny. He looked at Apple's 10Q, and he said, based on the app sales, iTunes sales, and all of that. He said, if you were to just split off iTunes into its own company, it would be 130 on the Fortune 500.
Bigger than Kraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bigger than the Gap.
It's doing okay. Gross revenues, he figured out based on all this information of the iTunes, is gross revenue $7 billion a quarter. A quarter. On the yearly basis, the iTunes Software Services Group had gross revenues of $23.5 billion with a growth of 34% year over year.
It's not bad.
I take it.
If you like that kind of thing.
Why Eddie Q?
Money hand over fist.
So, but really, and I don't know anything about running big companies, but it does raise the question. And what do you, if you have a massive bunch of, I remember when Microsoft first started taking off, they didn't know what to do with all the cash. They bought certificates of deposit. They bought CDs.
We've got to stuff it into something.
It's like putting it in your mattress. It's like, what do you do with all that?
Well, and the hard part, what makes it more complicated is most of it's offshore, so it's not as complicated as Apple.
There's a tax consequence if you repatriate it as well.
Which Apple's avoided.
Right. So I think 70% of that is offshore, so that means 70% of it is effectively untouchable, I think. Unless you want to pay a fairly high corporate tax.
And you spend it overseas. I mean, you can spend it on things overseas.
They could have bought AT&T. Its market cap's $200 billion. They could have bought it,
The SEC comes with it, though, which they don't want.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I think what's more interesting, though, as you start to look at the Apple TV issues with that kind of money, is, Apple looking at going head-to-head with AT&T and Verizon and so on and so forth in specific markets. Much as Google's done the fiber.
I wish
fiber.
They would.
But I mean, Apple
is
got
it
the
in
money
their interest to go? I mean, look at Apple. So I'm trying to put myself in Tim Cook's shoes. Here's the challenge. Apple's got a nice little business. Mm-hmm. Doing okay. It's got a nice little business. But he even says, we want to adjust for the long-term interest of shareholders, not for the short-term shareholder or the day trader. And what he's really saying is we want to plan for the long term. So right. What is the long term? You're not about bringing the stock price back up. It's not what you're about. You're about, but you are about what's the next thing, right? Because you can't just coast off into the sunset. So
I don't think the information companies will get to do what the next big thing is until they start sidestepping the cable companies.
So the last thing you want to do is to get into a business, an existing business, right?
Well, I think that the, you know,
so you're saying become a middleman for content?
Well, no, a middleman for your own content. I mean, you know, so the thing is that I just don't think that you can do things that are aggressive and to prove models when you're trying to go through companies that have a traditional model that they want to maintain. So, you know, I think Apple, in the same way that Google has done, you know, fiber in a handful of places to experiment, it puts an enormous, if you look at what's happening in Austin. When Google went to Austin, it put an enormous amount of pressure on AT&T, who is now reacting.
How about this? Sprint has now backed off acquiring T-Mobile. Regulators were pretty clear that ain't going to happen. So yesterday, Sprint said, we're not going to buy T-Mobile. T-Mobile's only $18.3 billion.
Yeah, but I don't think you want to buy any of the existing ones. I think you're just buying baggage at that point. I think that looking at specific markets and building out your own network that supports those markets that allows you to prove what's there, what happens is that also when people start to see that, it creates consumer agitation. You know, I mean, you know, people get upset that they don't have that at their, you know, where they are.
Mark Gurman wrote a great article on 9to5 about the about what you can tell what Apple's planning based on the hires Apple has made. And we've talked about this a lot.
This has been going on.
it looks like a watch. So Cook said nothing, but every time he says it, he's getting massive headlines. Quote, it's the Wall Street Journal a few days ago, there will be new categories. We're not ready to talk about it, but we're working on some really great stuff. Which could be a paraphrase of what he said to All Things D 6 months ago. Right? He said anyone reasonable would consider what Apple's working on as a new category. He says he thinks Apple is still a growth company. That's kind of what investors are worried about. They want a growth company, but Apple's not really been showing the kind of, or at least its last quarterly report showed a slowing growth that might concern the market.
Well, I think a revamped Apple TV and an iWatch are two very different markets, and I think that they're at this point. I think they're pretty close to the surface. We're seeing enough rumors that I don't think that at this point. I think it's more of a when than if. I don't know whether the Apple TV is going to be an actual screen or not, but I do think that they're going to revamp what the hobby is going to turn into a business.
Yeah, that's a definite. But I can't help but ask myself. When he talks about a new category, is he talking about a new category for Apple or a new category for the industry? I'm pretty sure it's just for Apple, but I wouldn't put it past them to simply create something that they feel is so separate from anything else that's ever been made that they could call this, well, this is a brand new product that really hasn't existed before in this form.
I do think that one of the interesting, I mean, I think that a lot of the rumors with the Apple TV. I mean, if they open this up to games and, you know, lots of development and apps on your TV, I think that is, it may not be an entirely new category, but it totally changes the offering that they're putting on the big screen.
Wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah, particularly when I think that one of the least appreciated announcements from the last WWDC was iOS in the car. Because when you take this at the surface, you're talking about a way to make your phone integrate better with that little dinky little screen that's in your center console. But really what they're talking about is the ability to project an operating system onto a much dumber device in which the phone is your iPhone is still critical to the process. Your iPad is still critical to the process, but you can actually put it in a place. Interact with it in a place where it's not necessarily a handheld device. So I wonder if that really is one of the key things about the Apple TV, not just the idea of having a mirrored display or even having an Apple TV display, but the idea of your phone essentially being a host for a much more rich interface, a much more rich experience by virtue of the fact that this Apple TV can simply take all of this iOS infrastructure and simply use that just as a way to project it onto a larger screen.
Well, and I have to admit that I've been really thinking about the whole TV tuner issue and being able to actually integrate with the cable companies and possibly even have a DVR or anything else that looks like that. You know, I find myself, you know, irritated with the Comcast tuner that we have now. and thinking that if Apple TV, that's the last little bit, because I always have to go back and forth between the Apple TV and you know, the standard cable tuner. Being able to get that out of the mix, I think that, you know, it would be, I would never go back. I mean, if I could mix my cable viewing with my Apple TV with everything else.
I agree.
But, I mean, as a user, I just don't want to use it.
Steve Jobs said in his you know, the Isaacson biography, is it's terrible. It's crap.
Oh, my gosh. It's so horrible. Every time I use Comcast, I'm just like, this is amazingly bad.
We had TiVo, which was better. We had Replay, which was better.
Yeah. Right.
But they're not. That's not
Google TV.
But this is the scale of the problem that Apple faces if they want to do something that ambitious with Apple TV. Remember that a lot of what they're able to do with the iPhone version 1.0 was due to the fact they were able to negotiate terms with AT&T that were essentially, if you want this hot new phone, you've got to do exactly what we tell you to. And that includes add infrastructure at your end to make stuff work. And the only reason why they were able to make that work was because AT&T was really on the ropes. And they were, I wouldn't go so far as to say that the iPhone was a lifeline for them, but if the iPhone had not worked out for them, they would probably have been bought out by somebody else long before now. But cable companies are doing extremely well. There are very few of them who have the sort of like nationwide coverage that an AT&T would have. And so if Apple wanted to do that sort of integration where you would be able to put in something akin to a cable card inside of an Apple TV to make it into a cable tuner, they still have to talk to Verizon and talk to Comcast and talk to Cox and these few providers and say, we would very much like it so that people don't have to pay $15 a month for your cable box and another $20 a month for this multi-room service. We would very much like our $99 device to work so well with your system that you don't have to charge them for pretty much anything. And given that all these companies are still doing are so well, they feel as though they can punch HBO and Netflix around. Apple's going to get laughed out of the room if they offer that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I think
that's why I really don't think that it's. I'd be surprised if it would be anything akin to like a cable box replacement or a tuner that works off of anything other than over the ear broadcast.
You don't want to deal with cable. Well, and that's here's an interesting thought from Evil IRC in our chat room. Aereo, of course, facing a Supreme Court challenge if they win. What if Apple buys Aereo?
I think it's a complicated business.
That's the company where you essentially rent a dime-sized antenna in a metro area and watch off-the-air TV on your Apple TV. Do we agree that that's the one thing missing that would make Apple TV a compelling product is live television? Apple certainly can do it.
Not really. I mean, for sports, it would be great. But how much of live sports, like day-to-day sports, are even being...
You know, it's funny. I'm watching the Olympics on demand because as much as anything.
Well,
else,
even when you think you're watching it live, you're watching it recorded. I mean, I already knew who won when I turned the Olympics on. I think that there are, you know, we do a lot of live streaming, and there are three reasons to have live, and that's news, breaking news, sports, and interactivity.
Interactivity.
And if you don't have one of the, you got to have one of those three, or it's not worth it.
I'm going on record to say interactivity is key to all future media.
Because
that's what we do, and that's why we do it live. Well, hey, I want to show you the Chevy ad. I was speaking of the Olympics. I was watching the Olympics, and I saw Siri.
You saw Siri?
In a Chevy ad. Did you see this ad?
How was she
This
dressed?
Is why you should not ask Siri to read your text messages.
How was last night? You got in kind of late.
Oh, it was okay. Siri, do I have any new text messages?
You have 5 messages from 5 people. From Frank, bro. Last night was epic.
Bro.
Next, from Tim. You ever find your pants?
Hmm?
Next, from John. I can't believe you got a tattoo on your...
The Chevrolet Equinox with Siri Eyes Free offers enhanced integration through your iPhone.
Is this a compelling ad? I can't wait to get
it's
that.
It's a funny ad.
I wish I knew how much different that is from like my old beat up old beater that simply has a Bluetooth button that can activate Siri.
My texts are read to me. I don't think when you I'm not sure, but correct me if I'm wrong. When you integrate Siri into the car, it's not like you have iOS in the car. You just simply have a pathway to the...
An easier button for activating it.
Right.
So you don't. So instead of having to reach up to the home button to do that because you have it safely docked, you have it right.
And notice, by the way, the guy did what everybody does. He said, Siri. I always do that too. Why? You don't need to address her when you use it.
No, but it does feel more...
Then it becomes like a Stiller and Mira act. I said, what? Well, how should I know who called you the last time? I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to Siri.
Siri.
Oh, Siri, it's my phone.
What? I'm talking to my phone.
That's not your phone. Phones don't have name. You're going to tell me who Siri is right now.
I mean, that's part of the genius of Siri, that they gave it a very Pixar-like personality, and that took away a lot of the hesitation or discomfort from a normal person using the system.
Yeah. Although that's a form of skeuomorphism, I think, that we can...
Absolutely.
It is, but I got to tell you, the thing that every time when Siri first came out, every time someone asked me how Siri was, I would ask her to open the pod bay doors.
Open the pod bay doors, yeah.
Because the reaction was different every single time, and it was, you know, it was...
So, you know, by the way, Microsoft is also... Microsoft bought Tell Me, actually has a fairly good voice control system, but they are going to add a Siri-like... assistant to a Windows Phone 8.1 called Cortana, and that is a character from Halo. Beautiful, quite beautiful, and they're not. This picture doesn't do her justice. Voluptuous character from Halo.
Only Microsoft can take a perfectly good idea and make it weird.
They just a couple of days ago invested $15 million in Foursquare. That'll be the location services. I think you know Microsoft's playing catch up all along here. In fact, we just saw an interesting story. We'll find out in a couple of days at Mobile World Congress that Nokia, which is now a Microsoft company, will be introducing its first Android
phone. Forking the Android.
And it will be forked because it won't have the Google Play Store, which you really want. It will have its own Nokia app store built into it. So I think it's pretty clear that Microsoft's not going to give up, but they're going to make, as they always do, these kind of kludgy little... weirdo products.
I don't understand. You know, Siri. Like
the real threat is Android. Is it not? And in fact, much of the Siri functionality is in many cases better in Android.
Well, not really. No, they're just so different. I mean, I don't think you can compare Google Now to Siri because Siri, it really is exactly what it would be much more difficult to do that kind of in-car demo on an Android device because. Remember that Siri is really a micro app platform. It isn't like a hands-free sort of thing.
My Moto X knows I'm driving. If a text message comes in, a very nice lady says, "You've just received a text message from Lisa. Would you like me to read it to you?" I say, "Yes." I don't have to touch or look at anything. It reads me the message. Yeah. I blush. It says, "Would you like to reply?" And then I say, "Yes," and dictate the message. And then it reads me back the dictation. Which I blush again. But that's very accurate, which is interesting so far. And then sends it without any interaction except voice.
That's a Motorola feature for one.
I agree.
And secondly, Siri, what I love the most about Siri is that it's been set up to be smart enough to understand that if it doesn't have enough information, it's not just going to bounce you back. You can say, Siri, create a calendar appointment, and it will say, okay. Who is the appointment with? Where is it? What time is it? Whereas in terms of stock Android, you do have to make sure that it is in the format that this voice recognition software is expecting. And if you're missing something, unexpected things can happen.
What about Google now? They
did create a personality that you expect to have a conversation with to get something done.
Yeah.
They're also different services. Like Siri is at its heart a sequential inference engine. All it does is ask a query and then it remembers what the previous discussion was about and bases the future responses on the ongoing discussion. It does that very well. And it can link into a whole bunch of other services, most of which Apple doesn't exploit yet. But, you know, Siri is built into Spring Board now. It could theoretically have all sorts of services and apps hooked in, where Google now pulls in tons of data and then learns a lot of intelligence about you, what your air flights are, where you're going. And it does that prognostication thing, which is really, really convenient if you're willing to give them the access.
Yeah, I keep saying that the signature difference between these two services is that Siri is like the personal assistant in the next room who will do what you ask it to do. Google Now is more like the valet in the terms of the upstairs, downstairs, Downton Abbey, where you basically pick up your coat and there's already your theater tickets in the left-hand pocket and it's already been dusted down and there's already a car waiting for you outside because it knows that this is the time that you're supposed to be going out to the theater with Lady whatever her name is.
Lady Asquith. I like it. That's what I want.
I think also Google Now would be the one to recognize that, okay, I sense that your wife is in the car, so I'm not going to read that one.
I see the appointment you're going to. Your wife is with you. We'll just skip this for the moment.
Your photocopy.
And they'd be like, no, really, dictate it to me. No, I'm not going to.
He also talked a little bit about Google selling Motorola to Lenovo. I wasn't surprised, says Tim Cook. It was a logical transaction. He pointed out that Motorola was a financial disaster for Google. He also said that Google isn't committed to the phone business. Quote, I think it's really hard to do hardware software and services and link all those things together. You know it's hard, Tim.
Right.
If you're Apple, goddamn, yes.
You know it's hard. That's what makes Apple so special. It's really hard. So I'm not surprised that they're not going to do that.
I had a chance to speak to Ben Thompson earlier in the week, and he had a really interesting take. And his theory was that Motorola has always been for sale, that Google needed to buy it because of the Motorola patent threat. But what was in it for Lenovo is when they manufacture phones in China, there's no IP protection, so it's very easy to have low-cost phones. But in North America, the cost of licensing IPs makes a phone, you know, $50, $100 more expensive. But now that they can cross-license Motorola patents, they can reduce the bill of goods and compete on the price. And Google was never interested in doing vertical integration for existing products. Lines. They want to do that for the future product lines like robots and things like Nest that do home automation. The things that are really, really hard, they want to help drive forward by doing the entire widget. Everything else, including phones, they're much happier to be the horizontal layer on top of everybody else's stuff. And that made a lot of sense to me, at least.
Yeah. Who is Ben Thompson?
He does Stratekery. He was
oh,
on Apple.
I love that site.
What's interesting about him is he worked on Apple University at Apple, and then he went and worked on Windows 8 at Microsoft. So he has a very broad range of experiences to draw from.
Yeah, that's a very good site we've quoted from often. Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. Google did not wasn't a big loss selling Motorola. They got a lot of great stuff, and I think they got some concessions out of Samsung as a result of the sale that will, I hope, make a Samsung less crappy.
It was a good chess move.
It was a chess move. It felt like that anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the big box of stuff that they got out of it, I mean, at the same time, I think that there's more depth to this move than anybody's ever going to guess. I mean, the conversations that I was having with people I know inside Google who've been friends for years, well before they even became employees at Google, talking to me about some of the work that was being done, and without violating any antitrust, of course, but... The buzz that they were doing internally to make the Moto X as good as it could possibly be. It left me with the impression that this wasn't simply a stock transaction or an IP transaction or simply as a way of bullying Samsung. It feels as though, for at least a very large part of the Google inside the Google campus, this was an opportunity to create something that was a more Apple like Android phone, and to a great extent, they actually succeeded with the Moto X.
Mm-hmm. Asked about the possibility of a larger phone, Cook told the Wall Street Journal, quote, what we've said, I should do this in the Dr. Evil voice. Yeah. What we've said is that until the technology is ready, we don't want to cross that line. That doesn't say we'll never do it. We want to give our customers what's right in all respects.
Yeah, they don't like OLED at all.
I don't even know what he's talking about. There are many different parameters to measure a display, and we care about all those because we know that that's the window to the software.
They looked at OLED and they looked at Pentile displays and they were kind of revolted by them.
As they should have been, I agree.
Yeah, they don't think it was worth doing big phones. It's the same thing as doing LTE. You know, they're very slow in getting there because they wanted low power radios.
Can you not do an IPS LCD in a 5-inch screen?
It depends. If your Apple things are harder, it's the same reason Amazon tablets have higher technology levels than the Apple ones, because it's easy to make a small batch of that stuff. It's really hard to make 100 million of those things.
Yeah.
And again, Apple's not using OLED. They're not going to use Pentel. They have to be able to make 100 million really high quality LED IPS displays. And
that might
they're
be
getting
tough.
There.
Yeah, that might be.
And the other consideration is that they will be whenever they make this move. That will be the only source of this type of phone for the entire world. Whereas if Samsung, if an Android device maker or even a Windows tablet device maker decides to say, well, what if we had a new LCD technology that had yellow as a discrete color? If that turned out to be a terrible product or drive out the price or just drain the battery, you still have a million other devices that don't have that bizarre technology. Whereas if Apple screws up a large screen iPhone, every large screen iPhone on sale in the entire world is screwed up.
That's not good. Like Galaxy S5, we're starting to see rumors that's going to be announced soon as well. May have, in fact, a QHD screen, which would give it more than five and a quarter inch screen would give it more than 500 DPI, which is
absurd.
That's
I'll say it. I'll call it absurd.
Yeah, I think now at this point, I mean, I think anything past 300 is probably wasted, right? I mean,
I'd argue anything past about 200.
If you happen to have a hawk who likes to do multi-touch. The hawk will be chasing vermin on that screen until the cows.
But that puts pressure on Apple because, you know, for one thing, Apple. You don't think so? Because I think people pay attention to numbers. No, as stupid as that is, Apple knows that. That's why they said we have a 64-bit processor.
There is a reason for it. I mean, in Samsung's defense, it's the same reason why they have a 7-inch tablet at 500 DPI. It's because they want one screen resolution target, and that has to scale down because otherwise the large tablet will look silly. So if you have the 5-inch Galaxy S5 at that resolution and then the Note and the Mega and whatever else, because they do phones at every quarter-inch screen size, the ones that start getting towards 6 and 7 inches still look good and developers have one resolution to target.
Yeah, you know, I had a G2 Flex. That's the curvy LG phone. It has a 720p screen and 6-inch phone. It really doesn't look good.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. You got to have some resolution there.
Renee, is that really a problem? Because the Android world doesn't have a problem with all these completely disparate phone hardware from completely disparate makers that can choose their own resolutions on the fly.
True.
I don't know if it's a problem, but when I got a chance to interview Samsung, the product director for Samsung's mobile division, and that was his reasoning, is that they wanted to be able to present a consistent screen size to developers. And
screen
they're doing
res,
their own
not size, screen res.
Screen res, sorry, yes. Yeah. Consistent screen target for developers. And they're doing their own developer conferences, and they're trying to move Samsung in a certain direction. And that was the official corporate reason for why they were doing it, at least.
Yeah. Anything else about the Tim Cook interview? We really parsed the hell out of that thing. I think we got all of that. Do you want to mention anything about Sapphire? They're firing up that Sapphire plant in Arizona.
I do find it interesting that they're building it in Arizona rather than...
Well, they bought it, so it's always already been there.
But I'm surprised that they're building it in the U.S. rather than China.
Ah, well, that is interesting. This was a company...
Gorilla Glass was in the U.S.
Huh?
Sorry?
Gorilla Glass was already in the U.S.
Right, so and they acquired this company. This is not a new building for Apple.
Right.
They and GT Advance are open a facility in Mesa. Earlier this year, according to Mark Gurman in 9 to 5 Mac, we learned that Apple is aggressively pushing to make the facility operational this month and that it will produce a critical and new subcomponent for future Apple devices. We've speculated on this show that that might be the Sapphire on the fingerprint sensor or the Sapphire on the lens. But thanks to new documents and information... 9 to 5 Mac is uncovered with the help of analyst Matt Margolis. We have a clearer picture of Apple's plans. Here we see some parts. And he says, appears Apple is planning to build sapphire crystal displays for future iPhones. Not touch fingerprint readers. Not lenses for cameras.
That's a lot of sapphire.
That's a lot. That's a lot of sapphire. Documents detailing inspection tool components explain their purpose. It doesn't really mean much to read this stuff. High quality sapphire. Sapphire is stronger than glass. In fact, it's used on high quality watches, expensive watches, because it doesn't scratch. And, you know, normally in material science, the trade-off is plastic doesn't shatter. It's softer, but it scratches. Right. If something is brittle enough not to scratch, it's also brittle enough to crack.
Right.
And so finding a material that can both resist scratching and shatter.
I think it'd be great to have it for iPhones. I still think it makes more sense for a watch than necessarily for an iPhone screen, but it'd be great to have it on an iPhone screen.
Mark's point, I think, was they did the math on the amount they were producing, and it would take an awful lot of watches to use at the same amount of glass.
They're saying the first they bought these testing units. The first 518 units, according to Margolis, could build between 103 million and 116 million 5-inch displays a year. 5-inch displays. A watch would be considerably smaller. They're ramping up to do a lot of something.
And it could be just that's what they're going to use for all their displays. I mean, that could be another.
And they've ordered over 100 tons of graphite.
It's a lot of graphite.
To heat the furnaces.
It's a lot of pencils.
You know what? That would be a selling point. You know, there's a few things that are kind of ignored in the specs Olympics because they don't really lend themselves to specs very well. But longer battery life, I guess that lends itself to spec, but better battery life and a better resilience. My daughter's gone through 6 iPhones. I mean, they just crack all the time.
See, I drop mine all the time. I'm going to curse it right now, but I drop mine all the time, and I don't have. I've never had a crack screen.
It won't crack. You know, she has a case. It won't crack if it hits anything but the front. But if it hits the front, and this is true of all smartphones, if it hits the front, you've got a big glass panel. There's, it's you know, very difficult to protect that.
I got to say that ever since Apple stopped making the dual side sandwich of the iPhone 4, that's when I stopped breaking phones.
Yeah, that was bad choice.
For some reason, I have no evidence to prove this, but I suspect that one of the reasons for the design change is that I don't think Apple could have been blind to the fact they were getting a lot of phones back with back panel cracks. And these are, and even when I was accidentally dropping an iPhone, later phones, it's like, okay, they're doing pretty okay by there.
Yeah.
It would be difficult for them. How would Apple like actually sell that point though? If they say that we have our phones are now made with a sapphire front screen, and they're less likely to crack than anything else. So are they implicitly encouraging people to say, please don't put your phones in those ugly cases that we absolutely hate? And can they say that without essentially saying there is now an expanded warranty on cracked screens?
Well, I think they could do an ad in which they drop phones.
Right.
Remember the old Samsonite ad where they had a gorilla handling the bags? They just give a gorilla the phone. He throws it and stuff, and it comes out fine.
I bet that commercial would be the most expensive thing Apple's made in 10 years with all the lawyers who have to look at. Yeah. Don't say will drop things. Yeah. Say if drops. Don't say shatterproof. Say shatter resistant. Actually, don't say shatter resistant. If you could try not to say shatter, if you can say it's the most durable phone we've made, not ever. How about in the last three? No, not 3 months. In the last 2.5 months,
since the Motorola rocker
than most of the
just say it's sapphire.
Sapphire.
Say ooh, exactly.
I feel like, and maybe it's just me because I have such bad experience, you know, because of my kids. Both my kids have broken their phones many times.
My kids have too.
Yeah. But I think this is something that generally consumers
that's definitely about. One of those things that I think that
more so than a 64-bit processor or a faster thing or even a higher DPI screen, better battery life and it doesn't break. That's a pretty compelling. I think that's what real people want. Technology.
No, I think that the three things that you do is you have it doesn't break, you have better battery life, and you have better low light performance on the camera.
Ah, low light. That's good.
I think that's the constant.
Better camera. It
is the constant issue.
Let's also highlight that this is a feature that Apple can really make a lot of use of because Apple loves talking about materials. And if they say that this is not just another rinky-dink, blister-packed Android phone,
yes.
This is a high-quality phone made out of the best materials that exist.
And they're making enough they could put it in the watch, too.
Absolutely. And
why not?
I think it's
a slam dunk for a watch. I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, I'm wearing a test watch today.
What is that? Wait, don't. Let's see that a little longer. Is that that's the steel?
That's a pebble steel.
Pebble steel. Sure. Look at that. That's nice.
Yeah. My hand doesn't bend
it
that way.
It still looks clunky. I mean, I got to say, it doesn't make it a fashion statement.
I mean, we're not talking about this watch today, but it's. I'll have to say that it's at least within the bandwidth of what you would expect a men's watch to be. This is absolutely hopeless for. Oops. Sorry.
Did you just start music on your phone?
Yeah, because one of the coolest things about it is that it does have like a music controller, and so by trying to show you how cool it scrolls things, I accidentally
Are you man enough?
And when it gets to the end, so you can actually
that looks pretty good.
That's correct.
Yeah,
there you go. And so as it keeps moving, it actually will update and show you.
So I've seen a lot of Pebbles. I have one too. If Kickstarter guy, I've seen a lot of Pebbles amongst our text. Journalist friends, I saw my first Pebble in the Wild sighting yesterday.
Really?
I was picking up Lisa's son Michael. He was playing; had a play date, and the 16-year-old brother was watching them. And we were leaving, and the brother looked at his wrist, then reached and got his phone out. And I said, "Is that a Pebble?" Because I was far enough away, but the fact that his phone rang after he looked at his wrist told me he's got a Pebble on, and he did indeed.
Yeah.
That's an interesting. This guy's kind of a geek, but I mean. He's a real person, so that's interesting to me.
Well, this is my first time like wearing a Pebble like as my daily driver, and I'm really digging it a lot because you forget about how many times you reach into your pocket to touch your phone for absolutely nothing that merits taking it out, and that includes That includes that. Oh, the phone's ringing. I want to mute the whatever's playing. I just want to touch this button. I don't want to have to go out there. I don't want to have to even walk across the kitchen to where I left my phone to find out who's calling. All that kind of stuff. But we can talk about that later if you'd like. All I wanted to say is that if you had my real phone, for some reason, the architects hate men of average height who wear watches. Because doorknobs are exactly at the height of my wrist.
Yeah.
And so every watch I own will usually have like a scratch here and here where I just simply grazed it against a doorknob at some point. So that's why people are really, really hot about the idea of sapphire front faces on watches. Because we all know the famous story about in the development of the original iPhone, very, very, very late in the game, Steve Jobs threw his sample iPhone at these engineers, showing them all the horrible scratches on the front and saying, we are not going to let our phone look that crappy after people have it in their pockets for 3 months. We're having a glass screen on this thing. And that I'm sure that same mentality is right here, because you don't spend all that time trying to develop a legitimately beautiful product only to let users make it look crazy and horrible.
So should I see? I've been waiting for the Apple. I want to just. I mean, I figure if I buy a Pebble now,
same as when I had my Trio and I knew that there was a phone coming. So for like a year, I just was like just dragging along. Yeah. And so I'm doing the same thing where I'm just dragging along, waiting for the.
I have the old Pebble. The steel looks good, but I'm just thinking I'm not going to buy. If I buy the steel, I really we're going to regret it in 3 months.
I don't know. I mean, there's so many open questions about how Apple would actually implement this. Do they actually feel like a watch like this makes sense, that can actually control a phone directly? And also, would they make it open enough so that it would work? It won't be locked into an iPhone, but also that if Nest wants to do a controller, given who they're owned by right now, if Nest wants to make a controller for the Apple Watch, would they let them do that? There's so far, I mean, they've got no problem with putting that stuff into the iOS store, but how open will this device be, and how soon?
Versus Gen 2.
I think the other question, though, is that how many Apple users really care? I mean, I think a lot of them, if it just fits into their ecosystem, I think that 50 to 60, maybe even 70% of the Apple users will be like, awesome.
Okay, but is that like, I realize that this is the sort of conversation you have when you're 3 hours into a pot-filled weekend cabin with all your friends. But it's like, is that the proper role for Apple? If Apple really wants to aspire to greatness, do they want to create products that are only going to appeal to people who own other Apple products? Or do they want to legitimately realize that there are wrists, there are pockets, there are desktops, there are notebook bags that we are not in right now, and we want to reach out to those people as well? It's more impressive for Pebble to simply say that we're creating a platform so that most people who own phones can benefit from this device. No BlackBerry, no Windows Phone yet. Maybe they'll fix Windows Phone, but BlackBerry, I'm sorry, you're not.
Well, but I think if Apple only attracted people who already own iPads and iPhones and Macs, and a lot of them were really excited about it, that would be an incredible growth market for that it would be the largest electronic watch ever made. You know, they don't need to. I think that the issue is, at least in the first year or two, they wouldn't need to pay attention to anyone outside of their own user base.
Right. Just like the original iPod was Mac only at first, but at some point they had to prove it was a great product, and also that they were a company capable of creating a great product, they had to do a Windows version of it. It's sort of like building, hey, we built a moon rover that works great in Earth gravity with lots and lots of oxygen around it, saying that's great for someone who grew up on Earth and has access to Earth all the time and can control the Earth. Tell me, come back to me when you can build something that can work outside of your own environment and ecosystem.
Yeah, but I think that was also when Windows was so dominant. I think that the issue is a lot of people using these watches are going to be, you know, they're going to be an iOS dominant world. I think that Apple may do it eventually, but I think they could release the watch and go 2 years without paying attention to anybody else and sell more than they can make.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be successful. That's why I underscore the need to be in Colorado or Washington State and be very, very high to have this sort of philosophical discussion. But Apple is a company that's capable of and has achieved true greatness in its own time, and I just would hope that. As they're creating new markets and new opportunities and new products, they don't feel as though everything they do has to be so tightly wrapped up in their own ecosystem that they're incapable of creating something for people who haven't bought into that ecosystem. That would be a shame, I think.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, a new special channel for the Apple TV and lots more.
Woot.
Alex Lindsay is here from the Pixel Core. Renee Ritchie, iMore.com. Andy Yanaka from the Chicago Sun Times. Did you see the Super Bowl ad for Squarespace?
I loved it.
A better web awaits is the tagline. It was all the crap, you know, that you see on the web. And then clear it away and make a beautiful, clean website with Squarespace. Squarespace.com. It's web hosting plus the best web content creation tools to give you the best of both worlds. In fact, I just saw Matt Cutts say that Google is now going to downrank sites that have a lot of ads and clutter on the sites. You want to make a beautiful website, you want to go to Squarespace. The all-in-one platform makes it very fast, very easy to create your own professional website, your blog, your online portfolio. Look at this. They just added the logo creator tool. I'll show you the little movie. They're using Google Fonts, and then they've got the Noun Project, 30,000 icons that you can use to design your own kind of simple logo. This is what Squarespace is all about, is making things easier for you to do, to make your site look unique without having to know CSS or JavaScript. Just really great stuff. Very easy to use. 25 templates now. They've added more templates. You start with those basic templates, and you just customize them to your heart's content. I can make this full screen, Chad. Would that be easier? Let's go full screen on this. This is a demonstration of the logo design tool here. So you get these icons on the left. And like I said, 30,000 starting point. You can then add text, obviously, in any of the Google fonts. And there's, I don't know, 300 or 400 of those. It's just really, really easy to use and really gorgeous. But if you need some help, live chat and email support 24/7, plus a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. E-commerce is now available for all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations, great for nonprofits, or maybe, you're getting married and you want to do a cash wedding registry. You don't need the little envelopes that you slip into the silk bags like in The Godfather. You could just say, that's the modern way. Go to the Squarespace site, school fund drives, things like that. It starts at $8 a month. When you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. And they've got the great apps, too, the Squarespace blog app, which lets you post but also moderate comments. The new Metric app lets you take a look at page views and other statistics, unique visitors, social media follows. If you look at the code, if you do know coding, look at the back-end code. You'll see how gorgeous it is.
We're about to rebuild our website.
Really great stuff.
Guess what we're going to do it on?
Squarespace.
Squarespace.
Of course.
It's our current one's on Squarespace, but we did it in the old older platform.
Oh, you got to go to Squarespace 6.
So now basically what we're about to do is do a big upgrade.
It's mobile responsive. That means the sites look great on any size screen. That's the way to do it. You start with a free 2-week trial. You don't need a credit card. Just build. You can use the logo, too, and everything. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, just use our offer code MacBreak2. We're in February now, so MacBreak2, and you'll get 10% off and show your support for MacBreak Weekly. A better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. I like their regard for aesthetics. We'll go to squarespace.com. These guys have a great design sense, and in effect, you inherit it from them just by using Squarespace, which is great. Oh, this is their blog. Let's go to the site itself. Squarespace.com. Use our offer code MacBreak2. I love it. If you didn't see the ad, it's on there. It's really a great ad. All right, continuing on. I didn't see this. Did you see it? There's a Beatles channel on your Apple TV.
Beatles channel.
It's, I guess, for a limited time.
I think it's a recognition of the Sullivan anniversary.
Yeah, February 7th was the 50th. God.
You know, it was so funny. Why is everyone talking about the Beatles? And they're like, it's the 50th anniversary, idiot.
You know, Steve Jobs described the Beatles as the model for Apple's business. He said, my model for business is the Beatles. They were four guys that kept each other's negative tendencies in check. They balanced each other, and the total was greater than the sum of parts. Great things in business are never done by one person. They're but done by a team. I don't know about Ringo. You could leave Ringo out.
Ouch.
No, I love Ringo.
That former Beatles. I have to say that during the Grammys, I had this observation. I had it tweeted out that you have to remember that even on the worst day of Ringo Starr's life, a star's adult life, he was still one of the Beatles. If he spills coffee all over himself today, slips and breaks his hip on the kitchen floor, and nobody recognizes him when the ambulance comes in, he's still one of the Beatles.
Still one of the Beatles. Always will be. So is Tim Cook Apple's Yoko? No. Scott Forstall.
I don't know that we need to go there. It's definitely one of those similes that you have to cut off at around 1966 because there was a point at which all the four of these people hate each other and they couldn't even record with each other.
Steve had a little bit of a rose-colored glasses view of the Beatles. Apple didn't get the Beatles on iTunes for a long, long time. It was a big deal when they do.
That's because he stole their name.
Apple Corps. Remember they actually had a lawsuit with Apple Corps and they told Apple Corps. Wow. They told Apple Corps that we will never get in the music business. Apple computers did.
Oops.
And then they did. And it all started up again. Anyway, apparently there is footage from the Ed Sullivan Show of the first appearance available, quote, for a limited time. This is in the new channel. You can listen to the U.S. albums. So that's kind of cool. A new channel on Apple TV celebrating the 50 years anniversary of the Beatles. iTunes Radio comes to Australia, too. Hello, Australia. And all the ships at sea.
Yay.
Apple's iBooks court monitor, the ongoing case. You remember that Apple did not like the court-appointed monitor in the iBooks case. They said he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's never done this before. He's getting a lot of money, and he's really pissing us off. Michael Bromwich, they went back to court saying no. There was a little stay there, but according to the Wall Street Journal, on Monday, the 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge Cote, the Court of Appeals reviewed Judge Cote's decision, and they said Bromwich stays in place, but his duties are a little narrower. He's authorized to request interviews and documents for the company only to ensure that Apple has policies in place to prevent future antitrust violations and that senior executives and board members understand them. So I don't know if that really cut him back that much.
Well, his request to get Johnny Ive on the stand probably won't go anywhere now.
I don't know. Future antitrust violations? Johnny. I don't know. I mean,
I think that's what they really want to do is not have him talking to people who don't really have any impact on the iBook situation.
I think they felt like he was a little bit of a loose cannon.
Yeah.
That they had to pay him too much. He didn't have the expertise.
He's on a
fishing
expedition.
And now he's subpoenaing members of the board of directors and executives. And who is this guy? And I can understand why they would feel that way. And I think they probably realized they're going to have to put up with it.
Well, I think they realized that. But I think they realized he was kind of just doing this cha-ching. You know, I don't know. Oh, yeah, he was.
Okay.
For $1,000, this is just a...
That's what lawyers, that's how it is. It's just not, another job.
He didn't work so hard for this cushy assignment to waste it now.
Right, exactly.
All right, so we kind of talked about the watch. We mentioned Mark Gurman's great article. I think that you can make some decisions or some thinking about what Apple might be doing with the watch based on who they have hired. Because it really isn't merely fitness stuff. There's a lot of health stuff in here. They've been meeting with the FDA. You've got Bud Tribble. You've got Bob Mansfield, two of their superstars on the team. Kevin Lynch, who they brought in from Adobe. And then in the fitness realm, of course, Jay Blahnik. We've mentioned him before. He's a guy who did the Fuel Band at Nike. Tim Cook on the board at Nike, so that makes sense. But they've also brought in health folks. A guy who was a scientist at Philips Research named Roy Rayman. Ooh, I like his name.
I think the bigger picture.
He's a sleep expert.
Well, I think the big picture here, of course, is that Apple's hired 100 people to think about watches. And so obviously what they're trying to do is think about how to make what, at least when they come out the door, the best watch they could possibly make, you know, that does as many things as it can well. They're definitely not taking this lightly. This isn't going to be an experiment.
Yeah, they're throwing a lot of things against the wall, but it does sound like based on what the health book is keeping track of in iOS 8, Gurman says, according to sources familiar with iOS 8's health book, Apple is preparing its device to be able to interpret hydration. That's the first device I've heard of that. Blood pressure, blood pressure, glucose, pulse, and heart rate.
The one thing to remember about this stuff is that it's Apple doesn't just work on one device. Like some people are saying, how can they do all this this year? The technology is not ready yet. It's just impossible. It's too late. Does this mean it's delayed? All it means is that Apple, like with every other product, is working on this version, next year's version, and then 4 years out. And whether we see, you know, if a sensor technology is not ready yet, we'll just see it at a later point in time. It's not everything they're working on now is part of the product cycle of this device, not necessarily the specific iteration we'll see now.
But
absolutely, the version one will have a limited feature set, but every feature will work perfectly, or at least that will be the ideal.
But they hired a guy with white hair and a lab coat. That means to me, this guy is an expert on measuring pulse.
But I think a lot of this stuff is also you're going to be thinking about what you want three versions down when you make the first one. You know, because you got to think about the a lot of those bits and pieces. I definitely agree with Renee and Andy that
you're not going to read the tea leaves and say, oh, look.
No, we'll get something simpler. I mean, we got the first iPhone didn't have any apps.
First iPad,
Big.
I'll put it this way. If any company can successfully sell a product that requires you to insert a catheter, I think it's going to be Apple.
Yow.
Ouch.
Ow.
Well, do you want the data or do you not want the data? Yes or no? It's that simple.
How badly do you want the data?
All right. Just bringing it up. Just mentioning it.
No, but I think it's like what we discussed this previously, like Passbook and everything else. We'll see the first iteration of the technology that will become a lot more promising as more stuff falls into place.
Yeah.
How much do you think they're going to have to charge for this? I've been turning that one over in my mind. How much could they charge for an Apple Watch, regardless of what it does, to make it into an attractive accessory to all the other Apple stuff that you have?
Well, I think we can answer the question, how much could they charge? I don't know if we could say how much they will charge.
Is it aimed at the Panerai Rolex card?
Right. Well, it's not $50,000. But I would say, I'd say they can charge somewhere up to $500 for it.
What was the Galaxy Gear? Was that $300, $400?
$400.
Yeah.
And look how well that did.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, Effin Dunn in our chat room said, I have a Martian, I have a Pebble, and I have a Galaxy Gear. And the one I wear all the time, Galaxy Gear.
How much is that?
I think it's 400. How much was it? $300 or $400? I think you're right.
We have to wait for the Wall Street Journal leak, and then it will be exactly half of that. For sure.
Can they go over $500?
I don't think they would, but they could.
I mean,
$300 for the Galaxy Gear.
Yeah. $250 for the Pebble Steel.
Yeah.
I think it'd be $399, $499. I think that's the range.
Maybe, you know, now that I'm seeing that those other watches are that much, I'm thinking they could go to $700.
Oh, God, no. That's stupid. That's crazy pants.
That's crazy talk.
I think it depends on what it does.
I myself am thinking they got to price this at under the iPhone. For every $25 they charge above the cost of an on-contract iPhone now, that increases the degree of difficulty, I think, by a couple percentage points. I don't put it past Apple to create a product that is so compelling to command a premium price, but I'm thinking that they're going to be aware of how much these competing things work, how much these competing things cost, and they have to start thinking about how much can we charge for a device that pretty much nobody has right now. I remember that when the iPad first came out, everybody was thrown out. Oh, it's going to be $1,000. Oh, it can't be a dime less than $700. I think I said $700, $750. I think that one of the reasons why Apple got the price under $500 is that they understood that this was a brand new thing.
Right.
That they can't, that they were not going to be able to tell somebody, well, this is the reason why we charge $1,000 for our notebook is that it's $300 better than the $700 notebook. This is a watch that they're going to have to convince people that they actually want and need. So that's why I think that. I don't know what the target really is, but again, I'd be really surprised if it's much above the cost of a new iPhone.
And I do think there's a psychological barrier at $500. I think a $499 watch would
that's crazy.
Do much better than a $550.
$700 is crazy pants. $500, okay, tell me what it does, and you've got to absolutely...
All right, well, let's think.
This is You got to blow me away for $500.
If it just does what the Pebble Watch does, it can't be more than $200 or $300, right? It's got to be Pebble Watch price. But add to the Pebble. So the Pebble Watch does notifications. It does. You can play stop music. You can play. Actually, there's a little Flappy Bird game you can play on it. You wouldn't really want to play games on it.
Remember when Steve Jobs did the iPhone? He said, this is how much an iPod costs. This is how much a phone costs. And then he said, altogether, these things would cost you this
much. And then 3 months later, he said, guess what? We're dropping the price by several hundred dollars.
And they did that with the Apple TV, and they did that with the iPad when it went to the Mini. So they've got a history of putting things, you know, at what the market will bear and then making it cheaper.
So it does a Pebble. It does a Fitbit thing. Maybe it adds some unusual stuff like hydration, you know, measuring your hydration. Heart rate, and perhaps even blood oxygen, that kind of thing. So let's say one more thing. Let's say it's gorgeous. Let's say it really does. I mean, the Pebble Watch and all the others are clunky as hell. A guy might be able to put up with it, as you say, Andy. What if it's slim, it's beautiful. You're not embarrassed to wear it. In fact, it is a piece of jewelry. Remember, they've hired a lot of fashion people.
But now you're talking. Now you're getting into even another problem where you've got. People like you got their best hope is to try to sell to people like me who still wear watches. And it was just 5 years ago that I bought my first watch that was not made out of plastic or had a Star Wars logo of some kind on it. and even there, I thought that, OK, $200 is a reasonable amount of money to pay for a watch, because underneath me, there are people who stopped wearing watches a long time ago. Above me, there are people who are saying, I just paid $2,000 for a watch. Because you don't understand, every piece was pulled right from the buttocks of the most rare jeweled insect that science can find inside the Amazon. These watch aficionados, for which they are not going to give up their favorite watches for an electronic gadget. And remember that the other wearable that we're not putting into this conversation, we're talking about, okay, here's the $400 Samsung, here's the $250 Pebble. Well, how about the $99 Fitbit? I think one of the reasons why the uptake on that has been so strong was because it is so affordable. You can take a chance on it.
What if Apple doesn't try to compete with those and says, no, we're going to go after a product for the very well off?
Yeah. $2,000 BlackBerry.
There you go. Why is that $2,000?
It's the Porsche design BlackBerry.
You have that?
Kevin has that. It's
you
on his
dog, you. Look at that. How many of those do they sell?
I don't know, but they have a Porsche design store, and they have one in gold if you want to start going up to the tens of thousands.
I'm
going
to guess they sold about three, one to Alicia Keys.
But it doesn't, you know.
They gave her that one. Yeah. That's part of the sign deal. Market.
But I do think that they could go after. What if, okay, this is, Apple used to be really not a company of the people. I mean, it always was, you know, the computer for the rest of us, but it really was a computer for people who had a lot of money.
Well, it's a company that's for people who have a lot of money.
Yeah. So what if they just embrace that and say, hey, we're Porsche, BMW.
But that's why I think you'd look at a $499 range.
They wouldn't get away with that.
They wouldn't. Why not? Who's going to stop them?
People who have money to spend on things. I think Apple understands that here is how much money we can sell the reason why our budget MacBook is $1,000. But if they try to make a $2,000, well, it's the exact same thing as our $1,000 version, but it is framed in pure glimmering green, and it is an exclusive. You know, it's for the upper class.
You know what's a deal breaker more for me is what we talked about earlier, which is the openness of it. You know, all the other competitors, except for maybe the Samsung, but the other guys are open, and
they
I think, though. Well, they do, and I don't think Apple. It's not in Apple's blood to be an open product.
Yeah, I don't think it
to be an open product.
I keep talking about this, I'm more inclined to think that this, you know, I'm right-handed, so I wear my watch on my left wrist. I'm inclined to think this is Apple will make a right wrist product, so that this will, you will still wear whatever your favorite watch is on this wrist, but there will be another device like a Fitbit that puts in it, that is more like a band than an actual wrist device, that allows you to deliver new services and new sensors that can then be appreciated through a device in your pocket.
Yeah, the only thing I think, so I had a Nike Fuel Band for quite some time until I broke it, I guess I feel like once my Nike Fuel Band stopped working, I didn't have the need to go get another one. Because I didn't like having a two-wrist experience. I think that was the issue, is I didn't like having both of them. And I did find, though, that I almost wanted to just use my Nike Fuel Band instead of my watch, as a watch. And that led me to definitely feel like if Apple did what the Nike Fuel Band did and had a, you know, and did a lot of other little bits and pieces. I'd much rather have that than the watch that I have, which is, you know, in a reasonable price range to switch over, you know. And so, but I think that the, I guess the whole thing about, the reason I think Apple won't extend is that they just want it to work, especially when they first come out of the gate. I think maybe they look at expanding to other markets or other platforms once it's working. But I think the way to guarantee that it's really going to work smoothly is to not try to integrate with Android and a bunch of other platforms. Because, I mean, I know that we just started getting back into software development, and my programmer was asking me what platforms I want to develop on. And I was like, yeah, just a Mac. And when we do the iOS stuff, we're just going to do iOS because I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about how am I going to work with a whole bunch of permutations. It's just too much trouble. And I don't need to.
Yeah, it does create a second level of dependencies. And Apple really likes being able to move quickly and not have to worry about what other people do with their stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm, but they do let you save on your legal needs. And if you need to, you can access the network of legal plan attorneys in almost every state. Pre-negotiated flat rates, very affordable. LegalZoom.com. Are you, I don't know, starting a new business? Maybe this is the year that you protect your family with a will or a durable power of attorney, health care directives, that kind of thing. Well, that's a New Year's resolution. You know, it's better than I'm not going to snack. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to incorporate or form an LLC, and I'm going to make $1 million. Of course, the problem is when you're starting this business, you don't have $1 million to waste. So $99 can get you an LLC or a Chapter S or C corporation, plus the state filing fees. That's what we did when I started Twit. And we're still using those papers, by the way, the LLC papers from way back when. 1 million entrepreneurs now have started their businesses with LegalZoom.com. Trademark protection as well. You got to trademark your brand. It's so important. One of the nice things, should give you a little peace of mind, 90% of LegalZoom customers recommend LegalZoom to their friends and family. 90%. You could create a will for $69, a living trust. There are no surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches. It's very straightforward, very easy. LegalZoom's step-by-step process was created by a team of experts in law and technology, so they've done it nicely. Look at all the different things you could do with LegalZoom. In fact, go to LegalZoom.com right now, browse around. I know there's some stuff you need to do, you've been putting off, you could do it right now. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but it can connect you with three third-party attorneys. That's helpful sometimes, like with the LLC, I was trying to decide what state to incorporate in. And there's benefits to Delaware, which is where we did form the LLC, and there's benefits to California. And it would have been nice, they didn't have it
at the
time. Delaware. But it would have been nice if I could have actually asked a third-party attorney. You can now. That legal plan is great and very affordable.
You know what makes a good neighbor?
What?
Good fences.
Yep.
That's exactly right. You know,
don't ask for trouble. Be proactive.
And the thing is a lot of times we get stopped. I mean, I come from a family of lawyers, and so you get stopped. Even I get stopped about wanting, you know, it's going to be expensive and everything else. And being able to find something that's going to tie some of these materials up is so important at the beginning.
Yes.
Not when you're in conflict. Yes. You have to do it when you're all friends. That's when you want to make the agreement.
I like it. LegalZoom.com. If you use our offer code MBW, you get $10 off at checkout. And they'll know that you heard about it on this Ahir show. LegalZoom.com. Give it a try today. I don't know if there's a whole lot more to talk about. What else should we talk about? Anybody got anything here? iOS 7.1. It's going to come out in March. It's not going to come out. It is going to come out in March.
There's no GM yet. There's no final seat for developers yet, GM candidate.
So it means March probably, huh?
Yeah.
Do you think the beta 5, have you heard from your sources, is good enough to get the job done?
I haven't seen anyone throwing their phones into the river in Abtech 4. So.
I think it is much needed. I don't think they should delay it too much longer.
I think they should have put out a 7.0.5 for everybody that fixed a lot of the lingering bugs already.
Yeah.
It's way too long for a 7.1.
They perhaps have been waiting a little too long.
Yeah.
It's annoying. They got just this morning I was doing some reading on my iPad, and my iPad restarted twice.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, that's bad.
Isn't that frustrating? It's happening to you too.
Yeah, and I don't blame anything larger than, again, the scale of what they were trying to do with iOS 7. But it's like, oh, man, I remember when this never, ever happened. It was so where the last time that this would have happened would have been so long ago, I couldn't even remember it.
Yeah.
So it's not unreliable, but it's just, unfortunately, this is a humanizing moment for iOS 7 that every I hope they'll fix with 7.1. Yeah.
Every respring is a punch in your Apple heart.
It's like when you see your favorite action star when he knows he doesn't have another movie coming up for another 4 months. He's like, oh, he doesn't always have those rippling abs and that suntan. That really is only something that he has when it's time for, okay, he is human after all.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you find out your father didn't know the answer to that one question.
Oh.
Or when you find out that this is when you put like cooking temperatures for like pork were recently reduced like by the USDA like 3 years ago, and I always used to hate like my mother's pork chops, but now I'm cooking them at like, and so I thought I hated pork, and now I'm cooking at the right temperature, and like, oh, my mom didn't know everything about how to cook. this is moist and tender and delicious and flavorful instead of tough and leathery.
Oh no.
she could have made use of this information had she had it, but she didn't have it. But okay.
Let's see. Flappy Birds. We haven't really mentioned it. The latest.
Is there anything new now? Other than he's no longer there.
We need a special logo. Flappy Bird. America held hostage. Day 14.
We're not talking about Bob Costas' eye infection. international news story. But fine, if you want to have your click-grabby sort of headline about Flappy Bird.
Flappy Bird.
I tuned into Twit Breaking News and I didn't see it. I was just brokenhearted.
So the latest is that Forbes sent a Vietnamese-speaking reporter to Hanoi to speak to Dong Nguyen. I don't need to explain the Flappy Bird flap, do I?
Well, we should probably catch everybody up.
Would you catch everybody up? I've done it so many times now, I'm sick of it.
Flappy Bird was released.
Flappy Bird was something you'll tell your grandkids about.
Yes, the day that Flappy Bird ended. So I get very, very difficult game, evidently. I have not played it, but I did download it because I found out that it was going to be gone. Constrained resources causes increased demand.
Yeah.
But, you know, it picked up. It became very I think that there was a reporter or a YouTube channel, I think, that really talked about it and pushed it into a
– there is some speculation that what pushed it – it came out in May, you know.
Right.
That what pushed it into the top of the, I'm sorry, hold on a second. Oh, what pushed it? What pushed it? All you have to do is say Flappy Bird. Mm-hmm. What pushed it to the top was that somebody bought perhaps some reviews because all of a sudden reviews started appearing for Flappy Bird in December, and the review speed ramped up quite quickly and then tapered off. And then ramped up again because people started using it. If you look at the early reviews, there is very certain similarity to them. That is a little bit of a giveaway. So, and also, Dong Nguyen, the developer, has three apps, all three of which started getting reviews in December.
Mm.
Only one of which caught on. The rest just faded away again. And Flappy Bird obviously had the wings to make it as a real viral success. So it did go viral thanks to this strategy. Nobody suspects that those downloads aren't real because all you have to do is look around you.
Right.
Everybody's playing this stupid game. By the way, Paul Thurrott has the highest high score of anybody in the Twit family.
What's his high score?
You want to guess what Paul Thurrott's high score is? Just at, you know.
17.
No. Paul has 131 points. But there are others of us... I have five.
I just don't know what the selling point of this game is because everybody who recommends it or talks about this is the stupidest, most frustrating, awful trolling game I've ever played in my entire life.
But you can't stop playing it. That's why.
Why would I want to download it then?
They have a game.
I want to have fun when I play games.
They have a game like that in real life. It's called golf.
Yeah, it's pretty much like golf. Yeah, isn't it?
It's just like, yeah. You fail most of the time.
Yeah.
You're mostly frustrated and. And every once in a while, you just get a tinge that you might not be a complete failure, and then you decide you have to play it over and over and over.
But at least you're outside. You might even see
You argue to yourself that you're getting a tan and some exercise, except that you're driving around in a cart.
A good walk ruined.
And sometimes a girl comes up in another cart and sells you beer. Okay, I don't see where this is a valid comparison.
You know, my family's golf course has a cannon.
What?
A beer cannon?
No, it's just a regular cannon. Better.
Does it carbide?
What?
Yes, carbide?
Yeah, it's a carbide cannon. It's big cannon. No, it's not a carbide cannon. It's a big cannon. It is a big cannon. We just don't put cannonballs in it.
Is it a mini golf course?
It's like, I mean, you can hear it for miles when they set it up. When they do the shotgun start.
What are you? Are you getting invaded by
it's
the?
When you do a shotgun start. So what happens is that when you have a tournament, you put everybody on all the different holes, so
sure.
that they, you know, you're not starting one at a time, but yeah. it's called a shotgun start, and so then they
you need something that everybody on all 18 holes can hear.
Man, you can hear
is
that
it nine holes.
It's 18.
It's 18.
No, it's a really nice golf course.
You have a family 18 hole golf course.
You had a farm that wasn't making any money, so the best thing to do with a farm that doesn't make any money, if you don't have Marcella Shale, is make a golf course out of it.
Do you charge people for use? I mean, can like people strangers
it's public
use
golf
it?
Course?
It's a public golf course.
It's considered one of the best in Western Pennsylvania.
So it's a business.
We have Pittsburgh Steelers come by and play.
The Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you use the cannon on the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Only if they're there for a shotgun start. Then they play bagpipes too.
My brother, who runs it, is all lawyers in his family.
My brother runs it. It is the craziest golf course ever because you just got to go to birdsfoot.com just to. You sign up for the newsletter just so you can get my brother's emails. Like the emails he sends out are the funniest emails that any company sends. There it is. See?
The Birdsfoot story. Wow. Is there a picture of the cannon on the website?
Do they have the commercial? So my brother Joe, this is how
is this it the Birdsfoot story? Is this the commercial?
It might be.
Click to view.
That's the whole family.
Here's the whole family. Birdsfoot Golf Course.
It's morning, afternoon, so late in the day.
Is that your brother?
Seems like
no, that's just one of our. My brother like will take a golf. Hold on.
When we bring people here for the first time,
we shoot them with a camera.
That's my dad.
Here's Al.
Birdsfoot is different. It tells a story.
How can I do a whole hour on triangulation with you, and this did not come up?
I don't know. I don't know how it didn't come up.
So Birdsfoot is built on one brother who's making a movie, another brother who owns a golf course.
Yes.
When you come out here,
that's a sitcom family right there. That's interesting.
I'm telling you, Arrested Development in real life.
Exactly.
Primarily.
Well, so they have the best movies. Because my brother just goes out with a couple cameras and shoots these. Yeah, he shoots this. My brother Joe.
Oh, Joe, yeah. We've worked with Joe. We've used Joe as a cameraman.
Joe's a monster.
He's using a 5D, it looks like, here. I mean, I like the bokeh.
Yeah, he did use a 5D for these.
I'm liking the bokeh.
Well, he did a commercial. We used the FS700, so we've got like a slow motion guy hitting a... Not many golf courses get a guy to come out and put a FS700 shooting. There's
Who's
my brother
Trav.
That's my brother Trav.
And I think that's one of the
He is the funniest guy. You know, like, there is okay, the funniest guy I know.
Who gets to drive that?
My brother Rob actually used to drive it.
Who's
family.
Michelle?
That's my cousin Michelle. She plays the bagpipes. She plays the bagpipes. She gets out there with a kilt and plays the bagpipes. It's amazing.
Serious question. Okay, this is not a joke. Serious question.
Yeah.
Have you ever pitched or been pitched for a reality show?
I think we should do it.
We have been pitched for a reality show because our family is crazy.
Our crew takes pride in their
wow.
work.
Wow.
Oh, it gets, so yeah.
Does she wear a kilt when she plays the
band?
Yeah. All right.
And she's really good.
Dead on, so we can have the perfect.
There's machinery, and we like that.
They spend a lot of time. There's my brother Rob running the machinery.
And it shows through.
It's family business.
We call him Three Fingers Rob. Wow, that's a nice golf course. Look at that.
It's a really nice golf course.
It's a pleasure to work with him every day.
Nathan leads the charge with our maintenance of the golf course.
That's as serious as my brother ever gets.
This is so cute. You got a whole ad and everything.
Yeah, this is the long version, not the commercial.
No kidding. We're going to.
I mean, you can cut it off. It's going to go on forever.
So if you're in the Pittsburgh area, go to the Birdsfoot Golf Club.
Right. But you should sign up for the thing just to read my brother's prose.
I really want to see a picture of the cannon.
Oh, I don't know if they have any of the cannons. You should show that, though.
Like, how big? Like, is it a surplus, army surplus cannon?
I don't know. It's someone that my brother knew, of course. And it's just, I don't know if we actually own the cannon, but I know we bring it out and fire it. And it's a big cannon. I mean, you can hear it from my parents' house.
Wow.
And it's miles away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. We've learned something new.
There you go. Just when you thought you knew everything about me, there's golf.
I will never learn everything there is to know about Alex Lindsay. That's anyway, for sure. That is
layers upon layers sure. upon layers.
I don't know how we got into that. That's an epic.
I don't either.
Rat hole.
Because we were talking, about golf. Flappy Birds, and we're talking about how golf. Like golf. And-
okay, Flappy Birds. That's right. Let's get back on topic. Not that this is anywhere near as interesting as Alex's golf course, but so the guy who created it was, according to The Verge, making, he told The Verge, $50,000 a day on, it's an ad-supported program. I can vouch for its addictiveness because everybody here plays it. And then I was talking to one of our interns, everybody in the high school, like within 3 days had downloaded it. I mean, it really is a viral hit. There's nobody questioning that.
Right.
But oddly enough, last week, Dong Nguyen, the author, tweets, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to pull, he tweeted this on Saturday, tomorrow I'm going to pull the program from both the Android and the iOS App Store. That's it. And by the way, it's not for sale, and yes, I still make games. Goodbye.
Now, I will say that the question is that a whole bunch of people must have downloaded it over the weekend, like me, and I'll eventually get around to selling it. It seems like it may increase the amount of money he's actually generating all this, you know. And then in a month, he'll say, "You know what? People talk me into releasing it again."
We don't know how much he sold, how many he sold on the App Store, because Apple doesn't give you that information. But on Android, 50 million copies. Presuming he sold maybe 150 million total, he's going to continue to reap the ad rewards as long as people continue to play that game. So he's made a lot of money. Robert Scoble agrees with you. He thinks it's a marketing ploy. He says, in 6 months, watch, he'll say,
it doesn't make any
from
sense
the
at
creator
all.
Of Flappy Birds.
Because
Crappy Birds.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially with that Forbes article that says that one of the reasons why he pulled it was because he didn't want to be responsible for people becoming too addicted to a game, and it really upset him.
Yeah.
And that I hope that that proves to be true, because that's a really a wonderful altruistic moment, a motive. But as soon as that thought completed itself in my head, I realized that, yeah, but you know what? You could have pulled the plug immediately without pre-announcing it if it really was upsetting you that badly. But no, you basically gave the entire world warning that, you know, that viral hit that everybody's talking about, you will not be able to get it. It goes into the Disney vault along with Song of the South on Monday.
And the real problem is that it's too addicting. You know, that's great. That's great marketing.
Well, there's also some other theories. Some of his friends told Reuters that he pulled it off because he got a cease and desist from Nintendo. Apparently, he stole the columns directly from Super Mario.
Oh, there's that.
maybe not. I don't know. I mean, and then Nintendo says, well, we don't know. They didn't deny it, but they didn't say they did it either. And then there's, of course, the additional point that when you make a lot of money in Vietnam, and a number of people pointed this out to me, stand back because here comes the government. And in fact, the Forbes guy said our interview was delayed because Dong Nguyen, whoops, that's a zero. Dong Nguyen had an interview with the vice prime minister right before of Vietnam, right before, clearly looking for tax revenues. So it may also be he just he wanted
it's
to run
more
flight.
More trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, it's a lot of trouble. A lot of money's going to end up in the hands of the Vietnamese government. Maybe he just said, you know, I think I might move to Bali.
Or maybe it was like there's a famous story about Whitey Bulger. Here in Boston, where somebody who was like sort of connected somewhere to him won the lottery, like just won like the mega bucks, like $1 million in the lottery. And guess what? A week later, it turned out that I forgot to say that it was I'm actually in a pool with Whitey Bulger. And so the lottery should send the money to Whitey instead.
Yeah, send it to Whitey.
Like, okay. So, because the most interesting line from all this is him saying, this has ruined my life. And it's like there's so many ways in which that just, again, put on your smoking jacket, get a snifter of brandy, settle into your leather armchair, lean back and wonder all the different ways in which
there's an excellent aftermarket in phones with Flappy Bird installed on eBay. Here's a iPhone 5, 16 gigs with Flappy Bird. So far, 10 bids, $6,000. But you could shop around because there are. Buy it now for an iPhone 5 for $1,000.
All I got to say is that, you know, we get paid to work with a lot of ad agencies on viral marketing campaigns.
This is brilliant.
And none of them have been as effective as this.
I think this is the case. You can't can viral. If you could,
it wouldn't be viral.
It wouldn't be good.
It'd be chemical weapon.
There's something magical that happens that no one really understands why.
Right.
Boy, a pipe and a dream.
A boy, a pipe, and a dream. Yes.
at the same time, I mean, not everybody posts something on YouTube with the idea, with the goal of becoming a viral sensation. Where it would have made them very, very happy if their piano recital or whatever had gotten, oh geez, like 10,000 people thought this was really, really great. But if it's suddenly 5 million, and now they're getting a phone call from the Jimmy Kimmel Show, and they're getting a phone call from the Today Show, and they're like, this was a, I thought that maybe 100 people, like my friends and their friends, would see it, and now this is all everybody's talking about all across the country this weekend.
Right.
It's that, that has the capability of freaking some people out. It's possible that I do think this is in some form a marketing campaign, but it's certainly possible that he was just not prepared to have the viral hit of the entire globe this week.
And I kind of prefer that story.
I'd much rather make a comfortable living in anonymity than make a fortune as the face of this viral hit.
Or I've already made a comfortable living.
He's easily made over $1 million, and in people Vietnam that goes a long way. So I suspect.
I'm talking in general. Like if you have, there are some people that if you gave them the deal with the devil, but let's say a friendly devil that just expects you to make them a nice Thanksgiving dinner some year, not so damn for all eternity. But I'm saying, I will offer you two different versions of success. You can either have the sort of success where you will do a line of apps that do very, very well and earn you a living of maybe a comfortable living, about $130,000-$140,000 a year, but consistent for 5 years. Or I will give you that exact same amount of income as the viral hit of the planet. You will have one hell of a summer in which there will be t-shirts based on your game. There will be sitcom pitches based on your game. Everybody will know who you are and everything you went through to produce this game. There are a lot of people who would much rather say, I will take half that money if I get to have the anonymity of no one knowing who the hell I am.
Interesting story on Bloomberg Business Week. The iPhone is a new international currency. Vernon Silver said, I live in Rome, where domestic work is cheap. Technology is expensive. One worker who was doing his laundry or I don't know, heard he was going to the States. She said, pick me up an iPhone I'll take that instead of cash for the month's work. So he went to the Apple store on Fifth Avenue. Lining up, he says, I was surrounded by shoppers speaking languages from around the world. The salesman looked stunned when I said I wanted just one unlocked iPhone. He said, we just got a shipment. We got the gold model. He says it's the most popular in Europe, the easiest to resell. To my right, a man with a credit card from a Saudi bank was trying to buy his third and fourth phones of the day. So Silver says, make it two. There was one more step. The salesman grabbed a landline from behind the counter to connect me with my bank's anti-fraud department. He says purchases from the store are red flags to the credit card companies. So apparently, this has become a currency. The iPhone is a currency. The priciest country, Brazil, an iPhone is worth $1,196. Jordan, Turkey, Romania, Greece, and Hungary all worth more than $1,000.
I have to admit, I've often thought about it. I just don't have the time, or I'm just too lazy. But I go in and out of Africa all the time, and especially when something has just been released, I get a lot of emails from folks like, hey, you know, I'll pay you 50% more than you paid for your iPad or iPhone or whatever. And it's been clear that if I brought in 10 iPads, I could definitely pay for my entire trip.
It's called iPhone arbitrage. Kyle Weens of iFixit, we've talked to him many times, said he was in Cabo, and the dive leader offered free boat trips if Weens ever returned to Mexico with iPhones, not for free, to sell at the U.S. price, the price that Kyle paid for it,
right?
Because there's such a markup in Mexico. iPhone arbitrage. Just thought I'd pass it along. If you're planning to travel, you might want to pick up a couple of gold iPhones before you go.
There you go. Just pack them in.
You know what? Actually, it's interesting. This is a long-standing tradition. When I first went to Eastern Europe in the 60s, Levi's blue jeans.
Right.
Yep.
Worth money. Big
Beatles
money.
Records.
I have a lot of artwork in our office that I traded logoed shirts for.
Yeah.
In Africa?
When we were in Egypt.
And they didn't want the money. I said, I'll pay you cash. And they're like, no, we got the shirts. You know, because I can get the cash anywhere. I can't get that shirt.
Right.
You know.
When we were in Egypt, we were told in 2009, our guide said, next time you come back, bring a lot of ballpoint pens. We can't get them. And the kids love them.
I take whole packs to Zimbabwe.
Yeah. And you hand them out.
Right, yeah.
Because they're cheap. Big pens are cheap.
Yep.
And they prefer that to money.
I keep on meaning to, like, when I go there, I keep on meaning to get PixelCore one, so they always remember me. Like 20 years later, they'll remember the PixelCore.
The Pixel Santa.
I handed out 2,000.
There'll be a cargo cult 20 years from now, worshiping the PixelCore. Oh, the great god of Pixelcore came to our land and gave us pens. By the way, Bitcoin, real quick, and then we're going to get to our picks of the week. Bitcoin, two things. One, Apple has killed the most popular Bitcoin wallet app in the App Store. Apple really doesn't like Bitcoin. Doesn't like it.
It wants no part of it right now.
We want no part of it. And there is a Trojan you should watch out for OS X that targets your Bitcoin wallet. So, watch out. Our show today brought, we're going to get to our picks of the week in just a second. Our show today brought to you by 99 Designs. That's my pick this week. 99designs.com. We're having a little, we're going to, we've used them before. If this is a place to go where you need, if you need designs, if you need graphic designs for landing pages, websites, even like email templates, t-shirts, that's what we use it for, car wraps, whatever, apps. You know, if you've got the next Flappy Bird, you can write a program like nobody's business, but do you have the design sense? 99 Designs has the designers. 280,000 designers are waiting for you to go and pitch them. They call it a contest where you say, here's what I need. We just did one for our new hoodie, and we've got five designs. We actually like the design so much, we bought at least five of them. We got so many great designs. And you can vote if you would like. In fact, let me if you go to our blog, insidetwit.tv, it's scrolled down. There it is. There's links to the four designs. There's design A, which is a beautiful four-color design. Then there's the next design. You want to show them all? That's the vertical design, design C. Remember these letters because we're going to have you vote. Design E is stylized. These all came from 99 Designs designers. I love these. We actually couldn't choose. Design B is the graffiti design, which I really like. Design D is the steampunk. A lot of people really like this one, too. So these will go on a hoodie that we will sell. You can cast your vote on our straw poll at strawpoll.me/1079823. Wow, he's gotten into the millions now of straw polls. strawpoll.me/1079823. Or just go to inside.twit.tv. Actually, you need to because you want to see the designs before you vote, because we don't have the pictures in the straw poll. I just love it. 99designs.com. You connect to the great graphic designers. Right now, there are 2,390 open contests. So you create a contest. You say, I need, a T-shirt or a logo or whatever. They have paid out, last month, they paid over $2 million to designers. $68 million total. It's a really great idea for a company. 99designs.com. Start your next graphic design project for as low as $199. And by the way, go to 99designs.com/MBW to get a power pack of services for free. The power pack gives you more designer time and attention, bold highlighting and featuring your design project in their marketplace. You'll get nearly twice as many designs. 99designs.com/MBW. We thank them so much for their support and their hoodie designs. I can't wait to see which one wins. Yeah, the straw poll seems to be down. I think we kill it every time we do this. Let's get our picks of the week. If we can do them fairly quickly, that would be nice. Andy Anaka, we shall start with you.
Real quick, because this is, I'm not sure if I've actually recommended this one before. This is a MacTubes, which is my favorite YouTube downloader for Mac. I was just this morning, I can't drag the window in, but so John Siracusa posted a video to this lightning fast F1 Ferrari tire change pit stop. And was so fast, I really wanted to look at it in greater detail, but was going too fast. So MacTubes can pretty much get any. I've screwed up my monitor setup. But the idea is that you just get the URL from the top of the address bar, plug it into MacTubes. It will let you either watch the video or via a little pop up in the corner of the screen. It will show you all the different video files that are hosted on YouTube. Excuse me, the actual source video files, and let you download the HD version, the SD version of it. If you want the really awful open source compressed version, that lets you get that. The idea, though, that now you can have a QuickTime file that's on your desktop that you can then watch. And then there's also lots of stuff on YouTube that are like 1970s TV shows that are technically not out of copyright, but nobody is claiming them. And so if you're gonna be able to watch this old like Tony Randall TV show, of which there were four episodes, this is your only opportunity to do it, which is to watch it on YouTube. And you can also download it in case it goes away later on. So I use it all the time for stuff like that. And also, again, when I really need a super slow mo through a Ferrari pit change. It's free. It's an open, I believe it's a Creative Commons or open source project, or at least a lot of the sources of it are common or open source. I've been using it for years. It's a very, very quiet little app, but it works great.
Very nice. MacTubes. Always good to have some way to get those videos. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week. Oops, you're muted, dude. Unmute.
Sorry, my pick of the week is Threes. You might not like me for recommending it because I can't stop playing it. I've been losing sleep over it, but it's a load of fun. I play this in lieu of Flappy Bird.
Much more satisfying than Flappy Birds.
Absolutely. So basically, yeah. The red and the blue numbers you can combine together. So 2 and 1 makes 3. Then you can combine any pair. So for example, there's 2 12s there. I can combine those. I can combine 2 3s. And you want to get the highest number you can. Every time you combine something, its value goes up. It's a lot of fun. I wouldn't say it's a math game. Some people call it a math game, but you're really just adding some numbers.
It's a matching game with numbers.
It's a matching game. Yeah. Absolutely. You play it. It's, again, you have one chance. As soon as the screen is full and you can no longer match any tiles, the game is over. I've gotten to about 9,000. Some people in my game center queue are at like 27,000, something like that. It's quick, so you can get in and out. It's incredibly fun. It's addictive in the right way. It's not maddening. It's actually enjoyable. And it filled that Flappy Bird hole in my heart.
It is the greatest game ever. Brian Brushwood showed it to me on Twitter. I recommended it yesterday, and I've had today. It is very addictive and very hard to stop.
And the best thing about it, there's no in-app purchases. There's no in-app ads. They just ask you for a small amount of money up front and then just let you play.
What are you showing there, Chad? Please save and embed wherever you want.
Yeah, this is that three. This is a new viral way of sharing stuff. It's a GIF that just plays over and over again. So I've been seeing this on Google Plus, Twitter. It's in effect an ad for Threes. It's on their website, and it's just a GIF, so they could throw it absolutely anywhere.
Very clever.
And it kind of shows how it works and everything.
This is the thinking person's Flappy Bird,
yes.
And it is spreading just about as fast. Is something about it. It's really satisfying.
And I hope more developers take up this model because it shows you can have a successful game without doing, incredibly.
It's not awesome. Freemium. It's $1.99, and that's it. No in-app purchases. And boy, gosh, I pray this is a success. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week looks like a cable.
I got a cable. It turns out I think Thunderbolt is the future.
No.
So I hesitated to recommend anything in this area for a while or because I really wanted to test a lot of the stuff. One of the hardest things to do with what we do with live streaming hangouts and so on and so forth is getting regular video, so cameras, your HDMI camera or your SDI camera or your switcher into Wirecast or Hangouts or Skype or whatever. And we have a lot of different interfaces, and we have kind of decided that this is not the only one we use, but definitely the one we're using now the most, which is the Blackmagic Ultra Studio Mini Recorder.
I hold it in my hands now, Mr. Chad, so you can show the world.
So this is about $150.
It's tiny.
It's you just have a Thunderbolt. So you need a Thunderbolt computer, but you can take SDI or HDMI. You plug the Thunderbolt in. It's powered by the bus.
This comes from the computer, like my Mac Pro, let's say.
And you plug
it
in.
Is it the video interface, the Apple video interface?
And it does. That'll
interface. I thought they had to reverse engineer this,
Yeah, there's the box for it. So it is. It's a Thunderbolt 2, and it's SDI to and HDMI or HDMI to Thunderbolt. So the it's basically just a very inexpensive way for you to get either your switcher output or your camera output, whether it's a little HDMI camera or an SDI camera or SDI feed into your computer.
And so you would hook into your computer.
So that way you want to get your video camera, let's say your G10, like these little cameras that you're using.
Oh, it comes this way.
Yeah, it goes in.
It goes this way.
Yeah, exactly.
So it goes in the SDI or HDMI port and out the Thunderbolt port and into your computer.
So that whether, and this will just show up on your Hangouts, on Skype.
Do we use these, John?
We tried it for Tom.
Ah.
But it has a
He says we tried it for Tom.
Compatibility with Skype.
Oh, Skype doesn't like. It's a lot of black magic stuff Skype doesn't see for some reason. We haven't figured that out why.
Well, to play with, we don't do Skype very much. We're mostly doing Hangouts. That's our company.
Works with Hangouts, though.
Works great with
Hangouts. WebRTC and all that.
Yeah, and so, and we use two different ones. We use the AJA IOXT. The reason we like the AJA IOXT is because AJA has a great interface that lets us know what the video pipe is, and that's not what you get with this, but this is one-tenth the price. So, so we use both of those. Most kits will have one or the other, and we'll use this, but if we're having any trouble, we'll put the IOXT in, but the IOXT is bigger and some more sensitive and so on and so forth. So it's so anyway, that's the Ultra Studio Mini Recorder, but if you're trying to get started and you want something inexpensive to get your video in for live streaming, this is a great solution.
So, you know, have you seen, thank you, that is from Blackmagic Ultra Studio Mini Recorder. How much?
$145.
And I was just going to ask you about this. Uber conference has been getting a lot of press lately.
We just started testing it.
This is WebRTC. In other words, it's Google Hangout compatible. Conferencing.
Well.
Or not.
I haven't used the Uber conference from the video. I've been using the phone version.
It does support phone calls in.
Uber Conference, the Uber Conference phone is just awesome. And they have these, what's really cool is they the funniest song. You know, it's I'm waiting on the conference call. You know, like that they use that we enjoy. There's no pin, which drives me crazy. I hate pins. So, by the way, I
do too, because you always... I'm on. You get the number, then you got to go, oh, no, what's the pin?
Well, and the problem is you can't just click on something and get there. And I'm on probably five or six conference calls a day.
So you get a phone number, so it's you a call pet peeve. In.
So Uber Conference works great. They now have integration with Hangouts, so you can have people in a Hangout, but then one of the people can be a phone call to Uber Conference, and then you can be integrating.
So it's not doing video then?
Not that I know of.
Okay. It uses Hangouts as the back end.
Well, you can now integrate it with Hangouts. Oh, Uber Conference works on its own as well. So Uber Conference can just go there. And I have the pro plan, so I can have 100
which is
people
10
call.
Bucks a month.
Like 10 bucks a month. It's nothing. And
there's a free plan that does a lot of
the free plan does 10 people. So for most people, that's fine. We do a lot of things that require a lot of people.
I wanted to ask you about this.
It's a lot of press. We're experimenting with this mostly because it integrates with Hangouts, and we're always looking at anything that touches Hangouts we pay a lot of attention to. We have like six pro accounts with GoToMeeting, and then we also use Team Speak. But this is one of the easiest ones, and because it ties into Hangouts, it's a great solution.
So I just wanted to mention that Kongregate, if you didn't get to play Flappy Bird at all, Kongregate with a K has a Flappy. That you can play. And wait a minute.
Was it exactly the same?
It's exactly the same.
That's funny.
There's a ton of clones, too.
Yeah, with a lot of clones. But, I mean, this is exactly the same. It's like Flappy Bird online. I don't know. Actually, there's a ton of them on Flappy Bird. I mean, on Kongregate, there's more than one. So that's weird. But I was just playing it. I don't know what happened. Oh, I have to watch an ad. That's why. Anyway, if you really say, what was this all about? I wouldn't if I were you.
If you're part of a high school history class in 10 years.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one, flappybird.io. That's good. Thank you, chat room. This is from SJFN6. Oh, there it is. Forget Kongregate. Just do flappybird.io. That's pretty much the same, isn't it? Is it getting any? Are you getting any sound?
No.
Oh.
Are you getting angry?
That made me be my machine. And I guess they pay for it with that little Amazon ad in the right there. That's Max McDonald. Oh, okay. Enough of that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for being here. Thank you to Andy Yanuko at the Chicago Sun-Times, my friend. Great to see you again and your little robot dentist friend. We thank Andy for being here. We thank Alex Lindsay for joining us with his golf club and cannon. I want video of the cannon.
Okay, we'll work on that. We'll get some video on the cannon.
Pixelcore.com. Soon.
It's this month.
This month.
This month.
You'll be able
by
to
end of the month.
Start up again.
We'll
so
be opening it back up so people can. Yep.
And the Exquisite Corpse. And Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com. And a little tip of the hat to crackberry.com for the use of the
facilities.
Facilities of the hall. Apparently, squishybird.com says F and Dunn is even better. All right. Wait a minute. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Oh, Squishy Bird. It's full screen. Oh, this is, but watch out because if you don't. Oh no. Ah! Ow! Am I trying to get squished?
You're the thing. You're the thing closing.
Oh, they reversed it. They've turned the tables.
Yeah. Like angry pigs.
Right.
We do the show 11 a.m. Pacific every Tuesday. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Please tune in live. That way you can feed us things like Squishy Bird. But if you can't make it here live, we always have on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW or wherever you subscribe to finer netcasts like iTunes. That'd be a good place to start. Do subscribe. You get it every week. Thanks for joining us. But now, I'm afraid it's time to get back to work because break time is over.